Behind the Arc. A look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc. Hear about the week's biggest storylines. From blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in-depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc. Here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome to Behind the Arc. I am Joel Silverberg, and it is so good to be doing the podcast again this week. Thank you, everyone, so much for checking it out, whether you are listening on Apple Podcasts, on Google, on our website, 99.1thesportsanimal.com, or on our sports radio WNML app powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. Thank you so much for checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, you can rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Really would appreciate more five-star reviews, so feel free to search Behind the Arc on Apple Podcasts and give us a review right there. With me, Joel Silverberg. I'm at Joel Silverberg on Twitter. And some fun stuff to talk about. Rick Barnes joined the Eric Ains Show, which I produce every weekday morning from 9 to noon Eastern on The Sports Animal, and had some interesting thoughts on John Fulkerson about the past season, the cancellation. But you're going to hear some of his comments on John Fulkerson coming up in just a moment. Also, all the big major college basketball awards were handed out over the past couple of days. We'll break those down. Who were the winners? Did somebody get snubbed? We'll talk about that. And Joe Lenardi, obviously very bored in quarantine with no March Madness this past March, has already released his way too early bracketology for the 2020-2021 season. Where does Tennessee fit? Tennessee is in the mix, I'll tell you that much this year, whereas the Vols were on the outside looking in his last bracketology for this past season, barring if the SEC tournament hadn't gotten canceled, a major run from Tennessee in Nashville. But Tennessee is in the mix, and pretty thick in the mix, I might add, according to Joe Lenardi in his way too early bracketology. But we get started talking about John Fulkerson, and obviously an all-SEC selection this past year, a fantastic season for Fulkerson, ended up averaging 13.7 points, 5.9 rebounds per game this past season for Tennessee, but it was really towards the end of the season where he started doing his damage. Those last four games especially, 15 points in the loss to Arkansas, 22 points in the win over Florida, 27 points in the win over Kentucky at Rupp Arena, 19.7 rebounds in the loss to Auburn, and started contributing a couple more double-doubles, was getting a little bit better on the boards. You saw him starting to work inside a little bit more offensively and became arguably Tennessee's best player, especially on offense, when you consider the struggles with Tennessee in the backcourt, Josiah Jordan-James being injured, Jordan Bowden being in a shooting slump, Santiago Viscovi kind of having to learn on the fly, getting his first career college appearance in Tennessee's SEC opener against LSU. And Fulkerson ended up being a really big addition. And it got me thinking, did Fulkerson's injury, obviously it has stunted his growth and his development in embracing a bigger role on this team. And he was more highly recruited. He was a higher ranked recruit than some of the other guys he came in with in his recruiting class. And obviously he took that redshirt year after he only appeared in 11 games during his true freshman season. And then you have the redshirt freshman year, the redshirt sophomore year, the redshirt junior year. He'll be a redshirt senior this upcoming year in 2020 as a result of that arm injury that he suffered back in just the 11th game of his college career. And so it's been kind of the thought, it could easily be thrown out there, okay, well, what if Grant Williams and Jordan Bone came back this year? Mainly Grant Williams. What if Grant Williams came back this season and you have Fulkerson and you've got Grant? Is Fulkerson able to just replace Admiral? Does Eve Pons play bigger? I don't know if it works that way. I've been racking my brain about this, and well, obviously, this is not ideal, but I think Rick Barnes and his staff, at the very least, made the most out of a tough situation. Obviously, you could say maybe not the most, because if Tennessee had been set to go to the NCAA tournament this season, maybe it would have been different. But you could actually make the argument that John Fulkerson's injury back in December of 2016 really helped pave the way for Grant Williams to really emerge into the role that he had, with Tennessee not having a ton of front court depth, with Kyle Alexander kind of having to learn how to play at a bigger role as his career went on, becoming an upperclassman. Grant Williams doing what he did to be back-to-back SEC Player of the Year, and then Admiral Schofield doing Admiral Schofield things, especially on the wing. You kind of wonder, would that have been different with John Fulkerson? And then on the back end of that, say Grant Williams does return and he's playing this past season. Tennessee's probably a tournament team. I don't have any doubt about that. But do you really see the emergence of either Eve Pons or John Fulkerson? Because if the focal point of the offense is Grant Williams, do we ever really see a place where there's room for John Fulkerson to just emerge into that? And it was not as if John Fulkerson suddenly started putting up 20-10 nights back in November. This kind of took some time, and you saw John Fulkerson's biggest performances come in SEC play, especially late, but these big wins against Florida and Kentucky that arguably put Tennessee back in the NCAA tournament bubble conversation before the season was canceled. You kind of have to wonder if you're really seeing most of these opportunities that both guys took advantage of kind of as the result of that. And so you kind of see the ripple effect from Fulkerson's injury. And the reason why I bring that up is Fulkerson was seen as a role player for most of his career before this season and was known for being a good teammate and wanting to distribute a little bit more. But Rick Barnes really didn't see it that way. And even when he was an underclassman, he talked about this on the Eric Ainge Show last week about what they were expecting from John Fulkerson earlier in his career.
We do spend a lot of time with him because he's a guy that I think he's just scratching the surface. But we spend time talking to him about his passion, how he's got to go at it, the way, you know, he watched Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield and Kyle Alexander, those guys, Jordan Bone, really just work. And he's gotten to that point, it took him longer because of, I think, the injury set him back to where he was just willing to. He's such a great teammate. I mean, you know, he just felt like that was his role, and we kept trying to tell him, no, that's not your role. Your role is you're going to beat out Grant Williams. You know, we want more. And I think he would tell you that during our conversations, that's been my approach to him, is that, Folky, we want more. We want it all. And you've got so much more that you can give. And I think, truly, I he had a terrific year this year, with being the number one target when he went on the floor, certainly the last half of the year. And I think he'll come back better next year. I really think he will, because of what he's had to do this year.
So I just thought that was all really interesting from Tennessee's head basketball coach about the expectation being, no, you're going to beat out Grant Williams and you're going to compete with these guys and you're going to be a bigger role. And that the coaching staff wanted him to be a bigger role. Usually you have to talk guys into the idea of embracing the team aspect or being a role player, maybe having to come off the bench. And sometimes egos get involved with some of these players who want to play big roles and want to shoot more and score more. Was not the case for John Fulkerson. Coming back from the injury, he was happy to be a role player, and he had to embrace being a bigger, significant part of Tennessee's offense this season, and that eventually clicked. And that's why the expectations are so much higher, not just from Rick Barnes, I'm sure, but from the rest of the staff, Fulkerson's teammates, Tennessee basketball fans everywhere. The expectation is higher for John Fulkerson to do even more as a redshirt senior beginning in 2020. I thought that was really interesting to hear all of that about what Fulkerson could be capable of, what he can do, because we have seen some of his biggest performances of the season. To go to Rupp Arena, to score 27 points, have 6 assists, and shoot 66% from the floor while doing it, is just it's unreal. It's remarkable. 39 minutes of action, Fulkerson hardly comes off the floor and leads Tennessee on this big comeback win over Kentucky. That just doesn't happen in Rupp Arena. It was a big deal when it happened with Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield, and all those guys, but Tennessee squeaked out a win in that one. That was a game where Tennessee didn't have to stage this massive comeback when they won at Rupp Arena a few years ago. It was just the 6th win in Rupp Arena in Tennessee basketball history. This is not something that happens very often. The fact that this Tennessee team, I'm not trying to be pessimistic about where Tennessee basketball was this season, but Tennessee basketball lost 4 very, very important pieces of the previous year's roster to the NBA. 2 guys declared early, Kyle Alexander and Admiral Schofield graduated and were gone. And this Tennessee team, which struggled and lost to Texas A&M, which lost to Georgia, which didn't have a good season, which struggled in some other mediocre SEC games, found a way to rally and beat Kentucky at Rupp Arena because of this performance by John Fulkerson. So I bring up these comments by Rick Barnes now showing that the expectation has always been there. And now you're starting to see John Fulkerson manifest himself into a larger role in Tennessee's offense. And that's why the expectation is going to be so significantly higher, especially when you consider that he's going to have more depth to work with. Maybe he won't have to do as much, and maybe that will free up some things for Fulkerson, especially with Eve Pons expecting to do more if he can utilize that mid-range game. Tennessee's backcourt is expected to be a lot better. Tennessee's got a great recruiting class coming in. The expectations are going to be a lot higher for Tennessee in 2020, and it shouldn't come as a surprise to Tennessee's coaching staff. It isn't coming as a surprise to Rick Barnes, and it's not coming as a surprise to a lot of pundits around the nation that believe Tennessee is a top 15 team in way too early top 25 polls. What does Joe Lunardi think? We'll discuss where he's got Tennessee in his way too early bracketology, looking ahead already to the 2020 season. That's up next right here on the Behind the Arc podcast. I appreciate you checking out the Behind the Arc podcast again on Apple Podcasts, on Google, on 99.1thesportsanimal.com, and on the Sports Radio WNML app. I'm at Joel Silverberg on Twitter. You can follow at Sports Radio WNML for all things sports, not just Tennessee, what's happening across the country in sports, in the entire world, really. And even though we've got no sports happening, essentially, because of COVID-19, we're still keeping you up to date on everything that we have. You can catch up on mock drafts for the NFL draft coming up later this month, other features that are going on. Again, we mentioned that you heard that clip from Rick Barnes in the previous segment. You can hear that full interview on the Sports Radio WNML app and on our website, 99.1thesportsanimal.com, in the Eric Ains Show section from last week. Also had an interview with East Tennessee State coach Steve Forbes. So you can check out that interview there as well, right there for you on the Sports Animals website, 99.1thesportsanimal.com. Joe Lunardi, been a little bored in self-quarantine. Didn't have tournament games to watch and enjoy this year. Obviously, this week, earlier on Monday, would have been the day of the national championship game. We've seen a lot of different projections. CBS Sports, I believe, had Dayton and Gonzaga meeting in the national title game, or Dayton and Kansas, I think, one or the other. Gonzaga, I believe, was a Final Four team. You had Florida State in the mix. The Athletic, I think, did a fan fiction national NCAA tournament and had Kansas beating Michigan State in the final, with Cassius Winston having his game-winning shot bounce in and out at the last second. So just a lot of, you know, everybody trying to have fun with what happened in the NCAA tournament, or what would have happened in the NCAA tournament had coronavirus not canceled the entire March Madness festivities. Really unfortunate. Hopefully we'll have college basketball to talk about this upcoming November. Obviously a lot of things happening with the transfer portal, with guys declaring for the draft, awards that were given out earlier this week. We'll get to that in the next segment, but Joe Lunardi has already released his way too early bracketology for 2020, and he's got Tennessee as a 5 seed, which I think roughly matches up to where you're seeing the Vols projected as a way too early top 15 team. I've seen some projections have them at 15. I believe Gary Parrish of CBS Sports had them at 13 in his way too early top 25 and one ranking. And Matt Norlander of CBS Sports has said he thinks that Tennessee is going to be really good next season. Tennessee as a 5 seed, so being in that 5-12 matchup, he would actually have them facing the winner of a first four matchup between St. Louis and Arizona State, with Richmond being a 9 seed, getting the automatic bid in the Atlantic 10. No Dayton, mind you, with Obi Toppin moving on to the NBA draft and expected to be a top 10 pick. But Tennessee is a 5 seed, so if you're basing it just on straight up math, that's a top 20 team in college basketball. And that's where some of Tennessee's best tournament runs have come in, is being as a 5 seed. That puts you up in and that he has them in the Midwest region, which would potentially put Tennessee in a 5-4 matchup with Florida State. The number one team in that region is Creighton. So if Tennessee made it to the Sweet 16, that is who you would be expected to face if you got that far. Again, that would be the just the 9th Sweet 16 appearance for Tennessee in school history. But interesting to see Tennessee here as a 5 seed with the potential of running into Florida State, which is a team that Tennessee faced this past season back in November in the Emerald Coast Classic in Florida. Tennessee lost that game by 3 points and then beat VCU on Lamonte Turner's game-winning three from the corner at the buzzer. But this is the sort of bounce back here you would expect for Tennessee. And I've said this before, Tennessee basketball is at a point where you are getting a number of guys that you can build a core around to stick around for 3 or 4 years. That's what Tennessee had with Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield, Kyle Alexander, and Jordan Bone. You had four guys that were juniors or seniors, and then when you throw in Lamonte Turner and Jordan Bowden, you had a lot of juniors and seniors. And with the exception of James Daniel III, everybody else from the previous year's team was returning. And you had some attrition. DJ Burns opted to transfer and wasn't playing the year before as a redshirt freshman. You saw Zach Kent transfer earlier this season. But ultimately, the losses that Tennessee had after last year's Sweet 16 team to this past season were just too much to overcome. And this ultimately just was not a tournament team. And it took a while for Tennessee to get things figured out on defense. It took a while for Tennessee to really shore up that backcourt. Santiago Vescovi provided a major boost. He was a huge addition. He's very valuable to Tennessee. And now you kind of have to wonder, is Vescovi going to start next season? When you consider the talent that Tennessee has coming in at the guard spot, Josiah Jordan James, with a full offseason plus a few extra weeks to get healthy and be ready as a former McDonald's All-American, Victor Bailey Jr., the Oregon transfer, comes into the fold. Got to wonder, is Vescovi actually going to start? And it's not, you know, suggesting that he shouldn't be, but it's really a compliment to the depth that Rick Barnes has built up. And Tennessee is that type of program where you get a solid recruiting class every other year and you add guys to the mix, you may have some seasons where, okay, you have to rebuild. You may not get to the tournament. You're a fringe bubble team and you may not get there. But every second or third year, you're going to have a team that's going to be driven by upperclassmen, that's going to have some promising underclassmen that are going to be highly touted, that are going to provide a spark. And you are going to have a team that is going to be expected to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. And as a five seed, at that point, the expectation is that you can get to the Sweet 16. It's, okay, you avoid the 5-12 upset, you get the 5-4 matchup. Hey, at that point, it is anybody's game. And really, the whole tournament is like that. But you find yourself in the Sweet 16 against a number one seed. Okay, now you're on this big stage. There's a name tied to the round of the tournament that you're in. It's just a matter of, can you pull off the upset? You might be going in as the underdog, but you know you've got a team that can go out and compete. You're not expecting to be a 9 seed or a 10 seed where you're going to get blown out in the first or second round by a team that just overwhelms you because you were fortunate enough to scrap your way into the NCAA tournament. The expectation is there. Now you look at some of the tournament teams that we had this year that were looking at potentially being a 4 or 5 seed. There were a lot of quality teams that showed some flashes of brilliance at times this past season that were top 10 teams that fell off or that went on a tough losing streak. That, I think, is where Tennessee is going to be, not necessarily dealing with the struggles throughout the course of the season. Tennessee still has to show that it can put this team together and then get it to play at a high level consistently throughout the course of the year. But if you're a 4 or 5 seed, there's some expectations tied to your program. And I think it's really good for Tennessee basketball to have expectations tied back into the Tennessee basketball program, considering the year of this past season just wasn't great. Coming off what was a disappointing run in the NCAA tournament, you made it to the Sweet 16. Tennessee was expected to beat Purdue. There was talk of going to the Final Four for the first time. The Vols were ranked in the top 6 in the nation every week in the AP poll. They were the number one team in the country for a month. It's really unfortunate that that season ended the way it did, losing in overtime to Purdue, especially after not getting an SEC tournament title, getting blown out by Auburn, then watching Auburn go to the Final Four when it's Bruce Pearl, Tennessee's former coach, that's getting them there. And then Auburn suddenly makes a Final Four before Tennessee does. So obviously that was frustrating. Doesn't mean that wasn't a great basketball team, but to then suddenly miss the tournament entirely, and that's what Tennessee realistically was looking at. It's unfortunate. But now there's opportunity for a bounce back, for Tennessee to rebound and get back into the thick of things when it comes to competing for the NCAA tournament, because now the expectation is that Tennessee is going to be really, really good. Tennessee is likely going to be ranked in the top 15 in the preseason AP poll when November comes around again. And I think that's going to be really, really impressive with the expectations that you heard about from guys like John Fulkerson. You throw Eve Pons, Josiah Jordan-James, Santiago Vescovi. This whole team is going to have a raised level of expectations throughout the Tennessee basketball program. Some awards were given out earlier this week in college basketball. The Wooden Award, Positional Awards, all of it. Discuss that next. Some of the biggest winners. Were there any snubs? Discussing that next in our final segment right here on the Behind the Arc podcast. Thank you again for checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, I'm at Joel Silverberg on Twitter. You can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcast, and you can check it out on 99.1thesportsanimal.com as well as the Sports Radio WNML app. Obi Toppin, Obadiah Toppin, the Dayton Flyers forward, was fantastic this season, and rightfully so, taking home the John Wooden Award as the most outstanding player in college basketball. He also took home the Karl Malone Power Forward of the Year Award, and just an unbelievable season. 20 points per game, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, shot 63% from the field overall on the season. That includes having a really good outside shot to go with it as well. Dayton was incredibly efficient, especially from inside the arc, one of the best two-point shooting teams in the country. And for a guy like Toppin, it's what makes it so bitter about being unable to watch March Madness this year and see the tournament, because Dayton, while maybe the resume didn't represent it from the non-conference schedule, because a couple of the biggest games they played, Kansas and Colorado, they're arguably the two biggest opponents, were losses, but they lost those games in overtime on neutral courts. And Dayton showed that it could play away from home. It ran roughshod over the Atlantic 10, but it did survive some close games against VCU and St. Louis and was able to play physical, and they were able to be efficient on offense. And they had so much more than Toppin. That was legitimately a top five team to me in college basketball in terms of best chances to win the NCAA tournament, because that team just knew how to win and they didn't take any opponent lightly. And so that's something to really look into when you see a team that, even coming from a mid-major school or a mid-major conference, okay, so it's kind of like Gonzaga, where we've seen them have high expectations and fail. Villanova, at times, even though they come from the Big East, for every championship that they've won in the last 5 or 6 years, they also have a really early exit as a 1 or a 2 seed. That has just happened. That's been the case with Jay Wright's team. And with Dayton, to me, when I see a team go undefeated in a mid-major conference, and that Atlantic 10 conference, it was likely only going to get one team in, but at one point in the season, it looked like a three-bid league. And even up until late in the season, with 1 or 2 weeks left to go, Richmond and Rhode Island were right on the cusp. If they hadn't taken a couple of boneheaded losses right there in the last 2 weeks of the regular season, it's possible that the Atlantic 10 gets three teams in. And then you consider VCU, how good of a team that they've been at times, and just the number of teams in the Atlantic 10 that can play quality basketball. St. Louis, which gave Dayton all that it could handle and then some the first time those two teams met earlier this season. So there are teams in that league that can play some very good basketball and had picked up some good wins. I believe Richmond had beaten Wisconsin earlier in November. That was a Wisconsin team that turned out to win a share of the Big Ten regular season titles. It was a pretty good Badgers team this season. And I think for a team like Dayton, when you can go undefeated in a mid-major conference that has a lot of good teams and you don't take any opponent lightly, that shows that you're going to more than likely avoid the early upsets. You're not going to lose to Prairie View A&M in the first round. You're going to avoid dropping a game to, you know, a team like Rutgers or NC State that's having to scrap its way in the second or third round when you get to the Sweet 16. And it's a team that's going to be battle-tested and ready. And I thought, even beyond Toppin, Jalen Crutcher is considered a top 20 player in college basketball returning next season. I think Dayton had a really good shot to win a national championship. And while the KenPom rankings would suggest, you know, yes, Dayton's a top team, but, you know, no team in the KenPom era has won the national championship being ranked outside the top 20 in either offense or defense. But every national champion since 2002, when the KenPom era started, has been ranked in the top 20 in offensive and defensive efficiency, both categories. And Dayton ranked outside the top 20 in defensive efficiency. But in a season like this, where the overall quality in terms of adjusted efficiency margins for these teams was a lot lower, with Kansas being the overall number one seed, Dayton would have really had a shot to buck that trend. If any team in the country could have been the first to buck that trend according to the KenPom rankings, it would have been Dayton. And I think Dayton had a really good chance to do it. When you consider Rodney Chapman, E.B. Watson's a great six-man coming off the bench. They had good depth. They had a solid 7-8-man rotation where their starting five did a lot of damage. Ryan Mikesell was really good in the post for them, too. But they got a lot out of their bench. And I think it's worth pointing out just how special of a season it could have been for Dayton, looking for what would have been just its second Final Four appearance in school history and first in half a century. And so it is unfortunate that the season went away. Other major awards that were doled out over the year, and Toppin also took home the Naismith Player of the Year, the AP Player of the Year, every National Player of the Year honor, major one anyway, that is widely recognized, went to Obi Toppin. Luca Garza, I believe, took the Sporting News Player of the Year award, and that was about it. But looking at the rest of the positional award winners, Sadiq Bey of Villanova won the Julius Erving Small Forward of the Year award. Villanova was a team that was sneaking into the tournament oddly under the radar when you consider there being so much pizzazz around Seton Hall and Creighton in the Big East. And all three of those teams ended up sharing the Big East title. But Villanova, it's kind of weird because early on in the season, you had Butler that was looking like it was going to be the best team in the Big East. At one point, Joe Lunardi had Butler as a number one seed. And instead, Butler ends up kind of falling in the middle of the pack. It still would have been a tournament team, but then you've got Creighton, Villanova, Seton Hall. But because of Creighton with Marcus Zagorowski, Seton Hall with Miles Powell, and playing all these big-time games, Villanova, it just felt like they were a little under the radar compared to what they had been in years past. And Colin Gillespie is going to have monster expectations leading that backcourt and having a lot of opportunities to score for a team that is expected to be a top five team to start off next season for Villanova. Garza was also named the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Center of the Year, averaged 23.9 points, 9.8 rebounds, so nearly averaged a double-double the entire season, was the Big Ten Player of the Year. He was fantastic and tough as nails as they come. I remember watching the Texas Tech game. He took an elbow to the face, was bloodied up, had to get stitches, but got the stitches and went back into the game, and then at a later game got knocked in the face again and just played the rest of the game with a gauze in his nose. So this guy, incredibly tough, is expected to come back to Iowa, and he is already a pretty heavy favorite to be the National Player of the Year for next season. It's a monster get if he comes back to Iowa at one point. And, you know, in the Big Ten, it's tough, and you take some losses along the way. But at one point during last season, probably in February, I remember thinking to myself, Iowa might be the hottest team in basketball that nobody is talking about. Luca Garza is that good. And they had some struggles in the backcourt, some shooting woes for some of their guys when they got into late February, early March. But that Iowa team is going to be looked at as maybe not a clear favorite to be a Final Four team, but a team that, man, if you are uncertain, if you're not willing to play physical basketball, especially on the interior, Luca Garza is going to chew you up for 40-plus points and 10-plus rebounds and is going to annihilate you single-handedly because he has been that good. Some of the performances that he had this season, Miles Powell earned the Jerry West Shooting Guard of the Year award, averaged 21 points, was also a Wooden Award finalist, along with Udoka Azubuike of Kansas, along with Garza, Toppin, and just a really, really good list of finalists. And then Marcus Howard from Marquette being the other guy who was a finalist for the Wooden Award as well. So Miles Powell was really impressive to me, missed some time with an injury, but that game that I'll always remember is the one back in November with Seton Hall and Michigan State, where the Spartans go into the Prudential Center and Miles Powell almost single-handedly just carries that team to a big win over Michigan State. And it kind of proved that Seton Hall had the ability to be a Final Four team. And then when they start losing a couple games, Powell goes out. Sandro Mumukalashvili ends up injuring his wrist. And so Seton Hall is down two starters with a top 10 Maryland team coming to the Prudential Center. Seton Hall finds a way to win that game. And this is a team with Anthony Cowan Jr., Jalen Smith, you know, a Maryland team that ended up winning a share of the Big Ten regular season title. Jalen Smith, who just declared for the NBA draft and had 21 double-doubles this past season, 60 blocks, 33 pointers. That Maryland team couldn't beat Seton Hall with Seton Hall down two starters, including Miles Powell, who is one of the best players in college basketball this year. Powell was fantastic, a pure scorer. Really excited to see what he could do at the next level. And then the Bob Cousy Point Guard of the Year award went to Peyton Pritchard from Oregon. This is a guy that I thought was a Wooden Award snub as a finalist. I don't know who you would put in his place, to be quite honest, because with Marcus Howard putting up the numbers that he did again this year, obviously well-deserving, Udoka Azubuike doing everything that he did for Kansas, Garza was terrific. Toppin deserved to win the award, hands down. It's just so tough to figure out, okay, well, who do you play? I maybe would have just made a six finalist for Peyton Pritchard, because I don't know if a single player in all of college basketball this year was more important to his team than what Peyton Pritchard was to the Oregon Ducks. The number of times that he had to come up with clutch shots, or where he wasn't getting a whole lot of scoring support and had to just carry the offense. That Michigan game back from earlier in the season was all Peyton Pritchard. Oregon does not win that game without Peyton Pritchard on the floor. Fantastic, great ball handler, averaged 20.5 points, 5.5 assists, shot 82% from the free throw line, and it just continued to be fantastic. It was easily the most exciting player to watch in the Pac-12, and Oregon, while suffering some losses down the road and made that race for the Pac-12 regular season title more interesting than it should have been with UCLA, I thought Oregon was easily the best team in the Pac-12. I thought they would have had a chance to really make a deep run, assuming they had all been healthy. And losing Peyton Pritchard, man, that's going to hurt. And they've got some guys coming back. Should be a good team again next year. But, man, I really wish that a lot of people on the East Coast that weren't staying up late to watch a lot of West Coast basketball could have seen Peyton Pritchard on a big stage again this season after they made the Sweet 16 last year, because Pritchard really was fantastic. Totally increased his role as a scorer and just an officiator of Oregon's offense. But man, Dana Altman, really, I bet he's really, really glad that he had Peyton Pritchard on his team this year. It was a fantastic season to watch for all these guys, but watching what these guys did over the course of the season was really impressive, all deserving of the awards, and unfortunate that we didn't get to see them all potentially coming together during March Madness in the NCAA tournament. But Obi Toppin, a guy that I have been high on all season, Dayton, a team that I've been high on all season as well, wins the Wooden Award, a complete sweep of all the major national awards that were doled out in the past week. And man, I really wish that we could have seen the NCAA tournament to see what Toppin could have done, because I had some colleagues here at the Sports Animal even who in February, they weren't aware that Dayton was a top 10 team and they weren't really certain who Obi Toppin was. People are going to know who Obi Toppin is now, and we'll see where he goes. He is projected as a top 10 pick in this summer's NBA draft, assuming all goes according to plan, of trying to get beyond the COVID-19 pandemic. And hopefully we get to see these guys playing at the next level. And those that are coming back, Luka Garza and company, should be a lot of fun, especially in the Big Ten with some of those guys coming back. Thank you so much for listening to the Behind the Arc podcast. I really appreciate it. Again, rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Would appreciate more 5-star reviews. And feel free to hit me up on Twitter at Joel Silverberg, at Sports Radio WNML, if you want to follow the station for all sports content from the NFL draft to off-season workouts, when they could start. We've had a lot of college football playoff expansion talk in the last couple of days on Sports 180 from 12 to 3, which you can hear with Josh Ward and Heather Harrington. A lot of content going on right now on the Sports Animal. Sports might stop, but the Sports Animal never does. Thank you again so much for listening to the Behind the Arc podcast on the Sports Animal.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on the Sports Animal.